and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And Jem, it's going to be about evil people this week. It's a topic you've come up with. So why don't you set the parameters and I'll tell you immediately my problem with it.
So I, what triggered this is something new, but obviously we can reach back in time. But the Harvey Weinstein scandal. Now, I'm not going to go into details because I know sometimes children listen to our podcast too. So what I wanted to say is Harvey Weinstein has been a major player in Hollywood for 25 years. And it now seems that he had some deeply unsavory and unpleasant sort of backgrounds and characteristics. And he might well end up in jail over those things. And if it's properly proven, then that's where he should end up. But here's the thing. It does taint a little bit all the projects that he's been working with. And I remember that there's been a number of famous singers who've been associated with various crimes, and therefore nobody plays their music anymore. So if we were to do the same thing with Harvey Weinstein's back catalogue of movies, you've actually got dozens, and I mean dozens, of Oscar-nominated or Oscar-winning movies over the last 20, 25 years. For example, every single Quentin Tarantino movie from Pulp Fiction, which was his second ever film, up to the most recent one, Hateful Eight, they're all Harvey Weinstein produced. Shakespeare in Love, Lion, which was Oscar-nominated just this year. Just endless amounts of really high quality movies. King's Speech, you look at his list and it's almost like, oh, that's a list of most of the movies that have won Oscars over the last 20 years. But they're now all just slightly tainted. And when you see his name pop up at the start of the film, you start thinking, I'm giving somebody bad money. Should I be doing that? So that's where my creative process started. And so not particularly historical, but over to you, Greg.
Okay, well, actually, I was going to take us in one direction, which I don't think I'm going to do, actually, at this point in time. I think you set out some parameters, because one of my things here is the philosophical question of evil and what it means and everything else. But I think you've given us parameters we can work with within the argument. And I think that if I start taking us off into a discussion of what evil is and can we really just classify a person as evil as opposed to their evil actions or the evil points in their life, I think we're in an entirely different ballgame. And I think the one you're going down for today is going to be more than enough for our half hour we've got. but kind of sort of related to that, we've got the question of, one, can an evil person do good deeds? Okay, so if someone has found to act evil in one aspect of their lives, do we have to therefore write off the other aspects of their lives? The other one that interests me from what you were saying there was that you brought up certain singers, and there are certain singers at the moment who can't, you know, you wouldn't play their music, etc., because of the things they'd done separate from their music. But the question kind of is a bit different for me when we're talking about Weinstein, and I think it's one that's going to be interesting as we go through the podcast. When I'm talking about a famous singer who has a song and then they do something wrong, and whatever it is, let's take it out of the sphere for the moment of evil or something like that, but let's take it to something as simple, you know, something as blasé as Justin Bieber a few years ago. Okay, turned up late for his concert, did a couple of songs, went off stage and didn't seem to care, and because of that a lot of people stopped listening to his music. Now, I've got my own reasons why I don't listen to his music. It's got nothing to do with him being late. But there were people...
So you're saying you're not a believer, then?
I'm saying I'm not a believer. But there is that fact that... And very often, it's not the case if someone's done something evil. When we're talking about art and music especially, people can do something that we don't like and it just kind of switches us off of them. But you can do that on a moral basis as well. But I think the question where it gets quite interesting is, if I have a singer and a song, it's quite easy for me to say, right, it's that singer, it's that song, I won't listen to that singer. When we're talking about somebody who is a producer of Hollywood films, really we're then looking at, right, well, we've got the cast, we've got the director, we've got the crew behind it. All of these people were involved in producing that. And if we say to ourselves at that point in time, oh, I won't watch that film because of one of those people, albeit one of the more influential people in the production, but by no means, you know, necessarily always the most influential person. You've got the director who very often takes the most influential role. But we are in danger, therefore, of, as it were, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And I think as we talk about evil people and what evil people can achieve, I think sometimes we're going to find that there are people that we would classify as evil through a lot of their actions, through a lot of the things they did, who were involved with a project. And the question is, at that point in time, do we throw away the entire project because one of the people working on it was evil? And I think that's another argument about whether or not evil people can do good things.
Yeah, of course, the most obvious area to go to with this would be the Third Reich, the Nazis, okay? Now, I every time I sort of say something like this, I always feel I have to sort of put up front, of course, the Nazi regime and Adolf Hitler was evil, and the crimes against humanity and war crimes that they committed have no... That you can't put them into context or anything like that. You can't dismiss them. They were evil. They were heinous. They were horrific. Okay? But that is not the same thing as everything they did was evil and awful. I will give you two examples of things that are still around today. So there is the jerry can, the can that you use for petrol. It was invented for the Wehrmacht, the German army, and prior to the jerry can, any kind of mobile refueling of a military vehicle involved quite sort of technical tools, and you know, you could get it wrong, whereas the jerry can was incredibly simple. If you've seen one, you might be wondering, why does it have three handles at the top? They're sort of all in a line with each other. That seems stupid. Well, that's for a really ingenious reason. Because when a jerry can is full of fuel, it's very heavy. So I would carry the outer one on the left, and you would carry the outer one on the right. And between the two of us, we can now easily move that jerry can full of petrol. However, when they're empty, they're very light. And if you were to hold either the outer ones, it would just clang against your leg. So you hold the middle one, and now you can transport it really easily. The little cross on the middle, on the side of them, is there because the stamped metal is actually stronger if it has an indentation in it. So it's a really simple, ingenious design. It's a design classic, shall we say, and yet it's a design classic associated with the German army. Now, you might have thought I might have gone down the route of something like the VW Beetle, but that was always a civilian project and was never weaponized. But you know, there's no getting around that when the Americans and British captured areas held by the Germans, they actually took the jerry cans because they were better than anything the Allies had. That's one. And the other one I just want to put out there is the 1936 Olympics, the Berlin Olympics, where the whole thing was, of course, a massive propaganda coup for Aryan supremacy and the Third Reich, and sort of, you could almost say, branding of Hitler in modern terms. And the thing that they invented, the Nazi creators of 36 Olympics created for the very first time, was the Olympic torch relay, lighting the torch in Greece and then relaying it all the way through to Berlin. And that now has become a symbol for what the Olympics are. We can't really extricate the torch relay from the Olympics. And actually, it was the London 1948 Olympics where the British had to have a tough question of, like, do we keep this tradition going? It was made harder by the fact that Greece was having a civil war at the time. And it's like, do we dare send somebody in and do that? Now, the answer was yes. They very quickly lit it and very quickly got onto a Royal Navy vessel and then sailed all the way to the UK. But, you know, it was created as a form of Nazi propaganda, going back to the Aryan civilization or imagined Aryan civilization. And every time we light it, in a way, we're almost adding credence to that now defunct and horrific society. So those are two more historical examples that are still kicking around today. And I'd love to get your angle on those, Greg.
My immediate angle on those is that I don't necessarily think that I can take that as an argument of, and I know this isn't one of our argument episodes, but I'm taking that as an argument anyway. That, to me, doesn't make an argument for evil people doing good things, because I think now I'm going to get a little bit philosophical about the...
off you go.
About the question. Well, for me, it's evil is a question of morality. And if we're talking about whether evil people can do good things, I think we kind of, to sum it up for me, would be to say, can immoral people do very moral things? Can they do things in some way? Now, when you take the Olympic torch, that is an incredible, it's an incredible symbol and all of that. But and particularly the jerry can, yes, that is a useful piece of equipment. But it was war, everyone's designing the best equipment they can. I don't think there's any moral argument towards, you know, they made the jerry can, that is a good thing as opposed to an evil thing. I don't think we can draw a moral line there. I thought what you were going to say, one of the things I thought of immediately when we started talking about Hitler and Nazi Germany was that I believe he was the first European leader to implement a smoking ban and try and stop smoking, because this was a dangerous thing that killed people and all of this. And again, it was down to a sort of a personal distaste. But I think we've got to define a little bit what we mean by an evil person doing good things. And I think there's got to be some point where the good we're suggesting they do, as you know, good art is one thing when we're talking about films or music, and that's good art and that's creation from the person. But I think the fact that Nazi Germany came up with a jerry can and they used a jerry can as a piece of equipment to help them fuel their war machines, I think it's difficult to take that as an example of an evil person, you know, or an evil society, an evil structure being used for the greater good in that particular way.
Okay, we can go bounce around lots of different areas here. I guess what I'm interested in, and going back to Harvey Weinstein for a moment, is you can't deny the quality of these movies, and he could obviously clearly sniff out talented actors, talented screenplays, excellent directors, pull them all together and create some of the best films we've seen for the last 20, 25 years. English Patient, there's another one that I particularly like. It's kind of been forgotten. That won 9 Oscars, for heaven's sakes. So, you know, he's really good at putting movies together, but he's clearly a really not good person behind closed doors, or indeed sometimes when he's bursting through your doors. I find that idea intriguing. The fact that somebody could be so amoral, or even, let's use the word, evil in one aspect of their life, but in another aspect of their life, they can create beautiful art.
Yeah, and I think, as I say, I think the art discussion is a different thing from, you know, sort of coming up with a piece of technology, because the sort of the ideas that sort of started to spring to my mind when we start to talk about can evil people, and I kind of start to think about it the other way as well. If we think, for example, about somebody like Leonardo da Vinci, who famously sketched designs and came up with ideas for war machines, although he was an artist, and the argument made is that he was drawing all these war machines and everything else like that from the point of view of a mental exercise. He was coming up with these that he wouldn't have particularly wanted these to be used as devices of war. But, you know, sort of that's kind of where I started. I started to think sort of a moral question. So one of the ones that I came up with almost straight away was taking ourselves towards Napoleon. And I know I'm immediately going to have arguments from as to whether or not Napoleon is evil in that classic sense of the word. But he was a dictator and he was fairly ruthless with it. But at the same time, certain laws that he came up with promoted equality. So he's a dictator. He wants one man control. That would seem to be as immorally unequal as you can possibly get. But at the same time, he came up with laws which got rid of titles acquired at birth. You could no longer be, you know, the equivalent, English equivalent would be, you couldn't be born to be a lord. You had to acquire your titles. And therefore, he was kind of sort of at birth. Now, obviously, that doesn't go into finances or anything else. But in a small way, he was therefore equalising the playing field a little bit at birth in a way that many of us, I think, would consider to be the right way to do things. And yet, at the same time, he was this dictator. He did have complete control. And that's where I think it starts to get interesting, where we look at someone who in the same field of politics, in the same field of control over people and everything else, shows these vastly differing views on what we, looking back, will consider to be moral versus immoral choices.
Yeah, yeah, and look, I take your point that perhaps putting calling Napoleon evil... I mean, you know, look, evil is a little bit simplistic, isn't it? As I said earlier, it's interesting seeing people who can be so terrible in one aspect of their life can be so great in another. Now, one that people may not know... I always find this interesting. When you look at the lives of the classical artists, because they're now... We sort of hold them in such high regard, the Michelangelos and Leonardo da Vinci's of this world, that we tend to think that they must have, if they to create such beautiful art, they must have been such beautiful people in their lives.
Whereas, of course, they were turtles that lived in the sewers and spent their lives hunting down crime. I mean, I see your point. They were really great turtles. Yeah, no, I take your point. Sorry, did you have a serious point to make there, Jam?
Yeah, I was, because I was going to mention Caravaggio. Now, Caravaggio was a painter I was only vaguely aware of, and then I went on holiday to Malta, and there was a painting he created for a church in Malta, and somebody said it was while he was in exile, and I said, oh, so why was he exiled from Italy then? Because he murdered somebody. It's like, oh, right, okay. And it turned out he had a habit of getting drunk and getting into fights, and he had a number of cases against him, and then it sort of culminated in the murder of this young man. So if we were to put him into modern day, if you had a guy who was going around getting drunk all the time, starting fights, causing, you know, grievous bodily harm to other people, and then eventually murdering somebody, and rather than facing the music, absconding from the scene and going somewhere else, I think before he went to Malta, he went to Naples. You know, he is considered one of the greatest sort of Renaissance painters around. He was later than, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio was doing it at the end of the 1400s. He was sort of painting at the very start of the 1600s. What are you laughing at?
I think you may have misspoken there. Got a feeling that Leonardo DiCaprio wasn't doing anything at the end of the 1400s.
Okay. Right, okay. Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah, so sorry. I'm clearly thinking, yeah, I'm still got Harvey Weinstein in my head there. Sorry, everybody. Yes, didn't mean to confuse one of the greatest painters and inventors of all time with a pretty good actor, but maybe not the greatest. So Caravaggio, you know, he, it's interesting because his paintings are actually quite often quite tortured, you know, quite sort of moody and brooding. So maybe this is actually his personality spilling out in painting and artistic form, because I guess you could look at some of his works and going, yeah, I could see that guy murdering somebody. But even so, we're, you know, just because he made beautiful paintings doesn't bring that other guy back to life. He should have served a life imprisonment or maybe been executed because he committed a crime, which nobody doubts he did, and even he sort of absconded from the scene, which is not a noble or nice thing to do. But does that in some way impact on his paintings? Should we like them less because they were painted by a murderer?
It gets really difficult when we start to try and conflate art and morality and everything else, and we try and look at them together. I watched very, very recently, and you know where I'm going to go with this one, Jim. I watched very recently a biopic of Harry Houdini.
God.
Now,
was he evil?
I don't think so, but here's the thing, and it's kind of going the other way. It's what he did do, and I was watching it with my fiance, and we were watching his biopic. You know, poor thing. I know, Jim. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what has she signed up for? But yeah, we were watching a biopic of Houdini, and she knows I admire him. And we got to a point which started to suggest that he may have been less than faithful to his wife, which is clearly something that's not a good thing. Especially when he, you know, he continued to profess his love for her, that she was his only love, and all. And again, we got an immoral act. And
was that true, though? I mean, because you're saying you're watching a biopic, and they sometimes change things. Yeah.
Almost certainly, but as with everything about Houdini, who can be entirely sure of any of it? But the fact of the matter is, if it is true, that is something that, you know, is against my personal morality. for me, that doesn't in any way flavour what I think of Houdini, because I think of him purely as a performer. I think of him down that line. That is sort of, as it were, the track that he's on in my head. He's on this performer track, and the stories of the excitement and all that. But his personal life, while sort of some of the stories about it are quite interesting, quite exciting, they don't in any way sort of colour my view of his performance and the way he worked in the Escapology that interests me. And I think that comes down to the question is whether the deeds that people have committed are big enough that they derail your mind and they put you down a different path entirely. From both points of view, is what somebody does good enough that we can forgive the bad, and vice versa, if someone does something that bad, does it distract? Will you? You know, if I go and watch a film tomorrow, I'm going to be honest with you, Jem, and, you know, I probably shouldn't, considering I'm spending an awful lot of time at the moment crafting the credit sequence for The Last Airship, trying to make sure it's right. And yet, at the same time, I don't necessarily go into a cinema and watch the names, every single name that comes up onto the screen. I just don't do it. And I probably, a lot of the time, wouldn't necessarily know who the executive producer of a film is. And so if I go and watch one of his films tomorrow, chances are I'm not going to really notice necessarily there's anything to do with Weinstein. And at the same time, with art, I don't know a lot of painters. If I walk around an art gallery, it's not really my thing. Art history isn't really my area of expertise. If I walk around an art gallery and I, you know, sort of see a painting, I'm either going to like that art on its own merits or not. I'm not likely to know an awful lot about the artist that drew it, the artist that created it. I'm not likely to know their backstory. So in some ways, I think when we're talking about art, we're having a slightly different discussion than if we're talking about political leaders or anything else like that.
Okay, but you say that, but the thing is that Harvey Weinstein was in charge of Weinstein Productions with his brother, okay? Now, it's still yet to come out in the UK. I think it's come out in America. But you've got the current war, as in the argument about electricity. You've got Benedict Cumberbatch starring as Thomas Edison, Nicholas Hoult as Nikola Tesla, okay? So these are sort of relatively big-name individuals. So Tuppence Middleton's in it, so is Michael Shannon. So there are a number of sort of big-name, well-respected actors. Probably Benedict Cumberbatch is the biggest name there. But before you even get to see the film, you're going to see Weinstein's name. And, you know, I think he's been running that company for at least 10 years. So there's loads and loads of well-respected films, good, you know, cool films and TV as well, where you just cannot escape it. And also things like executive producers and producers are going to be at the front of the film, not down there with boom operator. It is also worth remembering that Best Director Oscar is picked up by the director, but Best Picture Oscar is picked up by the producer. So Weinstein's been standing up on that stage a few times, waving Oscars around as well. So he is a part of cinema history, whether we like it or not. But does that mean that we need to sort of cut that out? It's a bit like Top of the Pops 2. Top of the Pops 2 is a sort of like a clip show of, for people from not the UK, Top of the Pops was a hugely popular Top of the Pops. It showed you the pop music from the 60s to the early 2000s. And, you know, what was ever number one, you'd probably have them in the studios talking to them. And each song was introduced by a DJ. Now, an awful lot of those DJs in the 1970s are now in prison, or it turns out that they have historic crimes against them, which means Top of the Pops 2 has to keep editing them out. You don't want them in the background of a song that's absolutely fine and in no way associated with that person. So it makes it a nightmare to show you all the good stuff from the 1970s because of these things. And talking about some of the performers that have had historic crimes against them, it doesn't change the songs. And there are a couple of really good songs from some really bad people that, you know, I do you know what? There's a part of me thinking, I'd like to hear that song again, but I can't. Or does it make me a bad person to want to hear that song again? You know, it opens this huge can of worms. And, you know, I figured it was worthwhile having a conversation about it.
I agree. And one of the particular singers, and I know you were both being very, very careful not to sort of name anyone, not to bring anything up.
Yeah, I don't think they need any public, no. You know, it would be unfair to
that's
yeah,
it. And
I don't want to talk about
it. I was going to say, I'm not entirely, but what one particular song, there's one particular song that I remember hearing as a child, and I vaguely think I heard someone doing... using it as the background to a magic trick or something when I was young. And it's about, you know, without going into, you know, I'm not going to... I'm going to specifically name the song. The song is called Two Little Boys, okay? It's a lovely classic song, okay? Now, the fact that it's associated strongly in our minds with somebody who has been found guilty of terrible things, I'm going to say... I think he's found guilty, so at the moment they'll say allegedly.
Oh, yeah, he's in prison.
Good, good. So has been found guilty of terrible things. That song, to the best of my knowledge, was written in the 1920s, if not earlier. So now we've got a song that's not the artwork of this particular person and was actually recorded in many, many versions prior to him. So now we're not even discussing whether or not his particular art should be tainted. What we have ended up with is... a piece of artwork that existed long before him. Even, you know, no one could re-record that song now without it being tainted by the connection to that. And that, to me, is another line entirely. We're taking lots of different threads and we're putting them together here and saying, well, hold on, does evil infect everything? And I think that's kind of what we're looking at with Weinstein as well.
Has
he infected these films?
I just have to put in one last thing. I don't know if this makes me inadvertently biased, but do you know what? This only occurred to me halfway through this conversation. But one of those performers, one of their songs was number one when I was born. So sometimes people sort of play the song that was, you know, a huge hit when you were born. And that can never happen to me now because it's kind of like one on the blacklist. So, oh, well.
That's incredible. I don't know what was number one when I was born, but... I'm going to take us down one more route. Now, Jem, I'm going to rely on you this week because what normally happens is I'll say to you, do you have one last thing to sort of sum up with? And you'll say yes. And quite often, not all the time, but quite often, what you go, you take us down quite a dark route to finish up. I'm given the job of kind of lifting the ending. Now, this time, I'm going to take us down quite a dark route. So in about 5 minutes' time, you're going to have to boost us up. In fact, we've only got about...
Well, we're going to have to rush. You need to look at the time. So, yeah, we're running
out of
podcast.
I've got the time. Okay, so very, very quickly, the one that I found really weird and interesting and sort of all over the place is the serial killer Ted Bundy.
Do you know what? I did look into that. I chose not to mention him.
I thought I would because, you know, without going into details, this is somebody who killed, you know, at least 30 people. He was, you know, a mass murderer, you know, absolutely terrible. I don't think if you're having a discussion of evil, you can get much more evil in an individual than this. You know, there are different levels, there are different numbers of people killed. But I think that, you know... you've got to hit a top level somewhere, you know, sort of that level of evil. And yet, the strangest thing that I, you know, because this sort of came up again and again as I was searching for, you know, is the fact that he worked for a suicide hotline for quite a while. And apparently, you know, that same, you know, sort of charm, I'm going to use the word, but I'm going to use it begrudgingly, that he used to help him commit the murders, he actually used, and he was quite successful in talking people away from the idea of suicide. And it's, you know, I don't want to dwell on this for too long, but the interesting thing there is a lot of the people that sort of said they knew him, a lot of the articles that I kind of spotted about this seem to almost be making the argument, and to me it's a detestable argument, an argument that, you know, there should be some sort of balance, that in some way the fact that he saved people should weigh up against the fact that he was killing people. And it's kind of an argument you hear various times in various murders. And this is the thing. Bottom line, I think you can watch somebody's artwork devoid of connection, especially when they're one person in a group of people that worked on a piece of art. I think it's possible, and especially over time, it is possible to view a work of art separate from the morality of the person that created it and actually just view it separately as a work of art. In my mind, that's kind of okay if you can find a way that the person, you know, I certainly think that Harvey Weinstein, whatever punishment he gets, he should not be able to, you know, he should not be able to get any further profit from the film he makes. Now, I don't know how they do that legally. And then I'd be kind of okay with watching his films. Like you said at the beginning, one of your big objections was you're not giving money to him. However, when we're talking on a personal level, when we're talking about real evil, especially when we're talking about the evil that takes a life, be that one life, be that 10 lives, be that a million lives, I think at that point in time, it's very hard to suggest that any sort of good deed could possibly counterbalance, could ever weigh out, weigh up against the evil that has been done.
Wow. Do you know what? I got nothing. I got nothing to lighten it. Although I did, I always like the line about if you die, heaven's boring, hell's really interesting, because hell's going to have, you know, people like, you know, all the great rock stars and, you know, probably Mozart as well, you know. And if you look at the great artists and you find one that has absolutely no stain or blot on their personality or on their actions, then they probably weren't very good as a musician or painter or things like that. You know, they all seem to be sort of relatively tortured souls. It's just some of them were torturing themselves rather than other people. And I kind of get that. But you know what? What you've done is you've taken it down into the basement of horrificness, and all I've been able to is take it up from the basement into the gutter of horrificness. But we're still not out of the valley yet. So let's wrap this one up before people twitch off.
Let me wrap this up. Let me say, we've talked about the difference between evil and good and artwork and everything else. But can I just say in closing that if you would like to see really, really good art, really, really well-made art produced by a really, really good person, I suggest you go to the Kindle store and you check out a book called Silent Crossroads by Mr. Jem Deduccio. I think a cheeky plug is the easiest way to get us out of all this hassle. So tell us a little bit about Silent Crossroads, Jem, just to finish up.
Silent Crossroads is the story of Harry Woods, the British soldier who fought in both world wars on both sides. It takes you from him being a callow youth in age 17 all the way into his 40s as he sort of fights across multiple wars, but settles down in Germany in the interwar years, so he sort of witnesses the rise of the Third Reich. It's sort of a way to get a feeling for the flavour and time of the history. There's some action, there's some romance, there's sort of family drama as well. It's a kind of, there's a little bit of something for everybody there. And what I'm really pleased to hear is I'm getting some really good feedback, largely from female readers saying, you know, I like this, this is good. So give it a go. Silent Crossroads, available, it's self-published, so it's available on Amazon in multiple different formats. It's out there now.
And I'm very quickly going to say Last Airship is still going on. That's all fine. Look that up. One thing I am going to plug that I've kind of got back to just recently, as you know, when I did The Last Airship, I crowdfunded it. I plugged that like crazy on here. Every so often on here, I'm just going to mention that I'm not going to do another big crowdfunding for a future series. That's the plan at the moment. What I do have running along is if you go to patreon.com/condensedhistories, you can actually become a patron of the arts and help support all of the shows and everything else I do. So go and have a little look at that in the meantime. But for now, a massive, massive thank you to everybody listening. We are just, our numbers are just going up and up and up. And that is only because you people out there are actually taking the time to go and tell other people that you're enjoying the podcast. So thank you so much. I say it every week. If every one of you goes out and tells one person this week to listen to next week's episode, our numbers
will literally have three people.
I mean, I don't know how the maths works there, but yeah. but yeah, please go out and do that. Don't tell the same person. That's the only way you end up with three.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. Thank you very much to my wonderful co-host, though, Mr. Jem Deduccio.
And to my wonderful even co-host, Greg Chapman.
And that's all for us this week. Thank you very much. Goodbye. And take care.